right, welcome back. Of all the stories I posted in the last 2-3 days, I think the one about Trump being quoted as virtually begging Iran to accept some kind of a ceasefire deal was the most realistic. I think that's probably true. He is probably also really giving Netanyahu occasional fits because he's Taco Trump. Netanyahu doesn't like that. Netanyahu, I think, was on the verge of literally, and maybe did, tell Trump, unless you do something, we are going to nuke Iran. And that's where Trump came up with that end of an entire civilization. How are you going to do that? You're going to do it with nukes. That's the only way you can actually do it. They've tried to bomb the hell out of them. They hit over 13,000 targets with bombs. And where do those bombs come from? They came from the United States, formerly United States. Where did the jets come from? They dropped the bombs. The formerly United States. Did Israel pay for any of those jets, any of those bombs? Hell no. Have they ever? Hell no. We are their ATM. Whatever they want, they get. And until and unless somehow somebody here jerks, drags, cuts the connections from the parasitic Zionist state of Israel that permeate Washington, D.C. and all of our government and go state to state, and you're not going to find much different. Unless somebody can cut that out of there, it's malignant, it's malevolent. We're never going to have freedom in this country again. It's over. It's over. We are a vassal state of international Jewish Zionist money, power, and control. Okay, with that said, journalist Mike Walsh, just a remarkable man in many ways. He's been on the program several times now. His stories are up every day. You can find them all archived at his namesake position on the left-hand side of the homepage. Mike is a terrific writer with a great geopolitical perspective that goes all the way back to World War II and before. So we understand when Mike says something, he's predicating it on reality. Hello, Mike. Thanks for getting up early again. It's been a month already. Welcome back, my friend.
Well, that month went very, very quickly, and here I am. I'm bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and with a cup of English tea beside me as we make a start. And by the way, start to the your analysis of current events are absolutely perfect. We're right in harmony on that one. You're doing very well, Jeff, very well. You're cutting-edge journalism right across the world. It's really appreciated.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Coming from you, that means even more. Thank you. I work hard, so do you. That's what it takes, a work ethic. Okay, so where are we in your current estimate on this so-called ceasefire? Apparently, it was arranged without Iran and the U.S. directly talking. That's what I heard, and I think I believe that. The Pakistanis did it all. Maybe there's some communication now. There was a move today that the U.S. allegedly, Trump, ordered $8 billion in Iranian assets unfrozen to let the Iranians get hold of it. I don't know that the Iranians are going to be moved in any particular dramatic fashion by that. But Trump is absolutely furious that Iran is going to charge $2 million per ship to cross safely through the Strait of Hormuz. Trump is a greedy bastard, excuse me, beyond measure, and he wants that money. He's furious that the Iranians are going to earn that income. So there we go. Anyway, just a little tip. Go ahead and tell us your thoughts, Mike. We're all ears.
Well, Trump has really messed up on this one, if Trump can be blamed, because he is, as you say, he is Israel's lackey, and he's the puppet in the string. Yeah. So, you know, really, do you blame the puppet or do you blame the guy who's got the hand up the glove puppet? And I think it's Netanyahu who is running things here. You'll notice that as soon as Trump agreed, you know, to talk about the 10 points that have been put forward by Tehran, then Netanyahu bombed the hell out of Beirut, killing over 250 civilians. And, you know, because the last thing that Netanyahu wants is an end to the war. Now, he's right. in a trap. Trump is in a trap. And he can't get out of it, because whatever he does, like agree to the talks in Islamabad, you know, Netanyahu is just going to keep on, because Netanyahu wants to keep the war going. And Trump has lost control.
You know what I think, Mike, if I might say something, I want to just add this. Uh-huh. Because I think it's relevant. I don't know that it's true. I think it might well be. I think Netanyahu and the same crazed, hate-driven lunatics that are running the Israeli government and controlling this one, I think they enjoy killing and destroying things. I really do. My type.
I've got absolutely no doubt about it. You know, they were cheering in the Knesset a few days ago when the war was continuing, and they were cheering the American bombers doing the work that they do. And I did see a funny remark on social media, which appears to be a running things these days. And the United States is a land, it's a farm in between Mexico and Canada, where Israel grows its troops, it grows its army. And this is basically it. I know we're reducing it to humor, but, you know, many a true word are said in jest. And this is what America is. It's a Jewish farmland for growing the American army and creating the wealth for the Jewish state. And I think it's a good thing from our perspective, because I have noticed that the interest in Adolf Hitler has really taken off in the last few months, because people are waking up now and they're so, maybe Hitler was right, if Gaddafi was right, if Hassan Saddam Hussein was right, if Putin was right, then maybe Hitler was right. So in that respect, it's looking good for us. So as long as we don't have nuclear war now, he talks and he doesn't talk. Trump doesn't talk. He blusters. And he really is typical of the boy who cried wolf. And nobody believes a word he says anymore. So when he says, you know, that last cataclysmic remark that he was going to, you know, this is a braggart. You know, Persia is a 6,000-year-old culture, a civilization. It's not a country. It's a civilization, entire civilization. It goes back 6,000 years. And you do need a lot more than a nuclear weapon to remove that. It's a vast country of 90 million people. Now, they didn't remove Japan by bombing Hiroshima or Nagasaki, and they will not remove Iran by dropping a bomb on Tehran if they dare to do it. But if they did dare to do it, Jeff, then the United States, like Israel, would be a pariah state. Nobody would deal with them at all. It would be totally isolated. Mm-hmm. There'd be no trade. It would be the leper of the humanity. And I don't think he's prepared to go that far. I don't think Trump is.
No, I don't think so.
Yes.
No, I don't think so either. However, that said, in order to resolve that kind of a dilemma, a false flag could probably do it. If a nuke were lit off in a medium-sized city over here with 10 or 20,000 dead, and they did the kind of job that you know they do, blaming Iran, a sleeper cell, the American sheeple probably could be stampeded to demand nuclear exchange in kind. I'm just thinking, I hope I'm wrong, but I think that they could pull it off with that kind of psychology.
Well, he's going to swing a lot of voters, because I just checked before the broadcast began, Jeff, and I see that two-thirds of the American people disapprove of him. And the polls are showing here in Politico in Europe that Trump is regarded as the greatest threat to world peace. Now, that's in Europe. He has done an awful lot of damage. You know, just imagine the greatest threat. It's not the Korean, North Korean leader anymore. America has really morphed into a rogue state. And the cries in Europe are, you Americans voted him in. You Americans have got to, by one way or another, you've got to get rid of Trump. Only then will the world start to breathe easy and shift until we reach a new world. A new world is emerging. We've got the Hungarian elections tomorrow. They are very, right. very important to Europe.
Yes, they are.
So
yeah.
There's a lot going on, a heck of a lot
Here's the problem with getting rid of Trump. Let's say they use the 25th Amendment, which is the legal way to do it. There are other ways. But seriously, if we get rid of Trump, what do we have? We have J.D. Vance, who is a Palantir creation, essentially. Peter Thiel created Vance. So we'd have a Palantir presidency. Palantir is Jewish-owned. Another Zionist entity right there in the White House. I don't know that we're going to, what the hell are we going to benefit from? And not just another flunky for the Jewish state. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, we're in the same situation in Europe because we have, unlike you, you have one president with a problem. Here in Europe, we got three presidents and not one of them are elected. And this is the problem. They are on a Trump side. And it's how to get rid of them. And I think we touched upon this on an earlier broadcast, Jeff, is I think that a democracy in future, for a while, until the mop flops, is going to start on the streets because there is no way of removing these people. And more important, removing the system that is rotten to the core. Your words struck me a little bit earlier on, you know, that Israel is a tumor in the American people's body. It has got to be balanced. It has got to be removed completely. And the sooner the better. But I don't think that this can come from the top. I think it's got to come from the bottom. And it was J.F. Kennedy who, you know, praised the Minutemen and said that all Americans should keep their rifles very close to them. And I think yeah. that he was quite a prophet.
Yeah. He knew. He saw it. It wasn't really hard to see if you simply had the big picture. And we remember in 1940, the end of 45, who was it? Averell Harriman? Somebody took him to Germany. He toured, shattered, destroyed Germany. He talked to people. He understood that Adolf Hitler would be in time. Probably, he wrote this in his diary. He said Adolf Hitler will come to be remembered as one of the most extraordinary men of our age. And something like that, I'm paraphrasing. Kennedy knew. He had the big picture. He understood where the control mechanism was headquartered and how it operated. And that's what got him killed. But I agree with you.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head when you said that he had the big picture. And there's not many leaders, you know, we're not gifted with many leaders of any nation who can see ahead the big picture as you describe it. You know, Hitler could, Putin could, the rest of the National Socialists could, and even Churchill could. But J.F. Kennedy, now he said, now we're going back a long time, you know, today we need a nation of Minutemen, citizens who are not only prepared to take arms, but citizens who regard the preservation of freedom as the basic purpose of their daily life and who are willing to consciously work and sacrifice for that freedom.
If the citizens, that's right. If the citizens don't stand up and take this situation on, they might as well put on their leg irons right now. It will be over. John Kennedy, in his diary, wrote, this is a quote, Adolf Hitler had, quote, the stuff of which legends are made, end quote. Understand? He understood, like George Patton did, what was really going on. The stuff of which legends are made. All right? That's John Kennedy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was one of many disciples, and they're all coming on board now. And I was just talking to the editorial of the Barnes Review, agree with me entirely. My bookshelves, unrelated to the, because they happened before the advertisements started to appear in Jeff Rentz Broadcasting, have doubled. So people are clearing the shelves of anything to do with Adolf Hitler. They are waking up to the fact that Adolf Hitler was right. Maybe it's not too late because, you know, the Jews are in a very, very tough position because before 1939 and the outbreak of Churchill's war, they could leap from, and they did leap from nation to nation. So when they spoiled the bed sheets in Poland, they leaped to France. When they did the same in France, they went to Germany. And, of course, after the war, they went to Israel, which, you know, Adolf Hitler said, it is not a nation, it is just the talking house of a criminal group. It's, you know, it doesn't have a history, it only has a criminal record. And, you know, Israel has got to be, and I think I'm probably one of many when I say that I am waiting for Iran to remove that cancer from the Middle East. I just did a story, I'd like people to check it out. You know, it's obviously on your website under Mike Walsh. Is I was in Lebanon, you know, before, you know, and we're talking 1960, so it was before the start of the Israeli state. It was the most beautiful, idyllic country imaginable. Check it out. You wouldn't believe how beautiful that paradise was. But then they got the neighbors from hell, and we know what's going on in Beirut now. So this brings us back to Trump and the present negotiations. Now, he says one thing, Israel says the other, and it's Israel that has got the voice. So they are still warring on Beirut. So the Iranians will not stand for it. It's not just that they control. Oh, boy, has Trump messed up. Not only do they now control and charge fees, massive fees, for going through the Hormuz Strait, and they don't have a choice. You can't go around South Africa. You can't go around the Capes, the two Capes. It's too far. But when they do, you could find that Tehran has got, they don't need a nuclear weapon. They have said this for many years. And I, although I'm not a military man, I'm a serviceman, I've said for many years, these days, the conventional weapons are so devastating, you don't need a nuclear weapon to wipe Haifa and Tel Aviv and other main cities off the face of the earth. Now, there have been the nuclear weapons have been relegated. They're like aircraft carriers. They're just sitting ducks. You know, they're useless. The world has moved on. And believe me, they can do it. Tehran can wipe Israel off the face. They can make it as uninhabitable as the Gaza Strip. And I think that we're getting very, very close to decisions being made in Tehran because you will not mess around with them. I know the Iranians. I used to sail very often into Karamanshah and on the other side of the river, Beirut. So I know the region very, very well. I had Iranian friends, and they are an old civilization. They don't back down. But unlike Trump, they keep their word. And he is between a rock and a hard place, is Trump.
I'm glad to see it. One final little footnote on former President John F. Kennedy. At the age of 28, when he was taken to Europe and given a tour of Germany, this is after the height of the Hate Hitler movement in the Western world, Kennedy went over there with eyes wide open and said, Adolf Hitler, this is a quote, Adolf Hitler will emerge from the hatred that surrounds him now as one of the most significant figures who ever lived. End quote.
It's a perfect quote, and I do remember that I said 40 years ago, long after I got involved in the fight for white rights, that this was a police spy, actually. I said, how long is it going to be until Hitler is no longer vilified? little while, but it'll happen in your lifetime. Well, obviously, I'm still alive. He said, what you have to remember, he said, for 300 years after Jesus Christ was crucified, no one spoke his name without spitting to the ground. And wow. He said, after the Napoleonic Wars, he said, it took 50 or 60 years before English people, German people, stopped spitting at the ground at the very mention of the word Napoleon. He said, it will not take anything like that long for Hitler to be redeemed. And we are seeing that now. You know, I publish a lot of books. I'm probably the most prolific author in the world in terms of multi-topical books. But it was always my Reich-related books that did the selling when they were on Amazon. They've removed them. We're putting them back on one by one. And they were, although I had 70-odd books out there with my name on the front of them, fabulous books, fantastic books, it was all the Reich-related books that were selling 90%. Now, that's going back before all of these changes were made, you know, with the current war going on, and with Venezuela and Trump and Netanyahu and all the rest of it. So things have moved remarkably, and although at the moment, although I have some good news for you, although at the moment we've only got four books on, they are creating, you know, most of the small money that I make. I'm not in the bestseller lists yet, but I do think I will be. And I think The Witness to History is probably the most widely read revision of World War II since 1945. And another thing is just a byword I was saying to my wife, you know, I can't explain it. It's a spiritual thing, Jeff. But, you know, I feel privileged that at my age, at 83, I was actually on this earth, walking this earth, at the same time as Adolf Hitler and Hermann Göring and Goebbels and the rest of them were walking on this earth. And I feel that that is a great privilege. I think it would have been a great privilege if I'd have been alive during the time that Jesus was walking the earth. And Franco, of course, I feel a great privilege that comes from my age, from my maturity, from my veteran status. And I use it. I've accumulated an awful lot of information which they would like to put on the book bonfires, but they can't because it's out there already in my books. And if I fall off the perch before they're all published, somebody else will pick up the baton and they will carry on with it. So the word is out and the truth will set you free.
Well said, and all true. Witness to History. If you really want to take a look at the truth of World War II, we lived during those years under the most ruthless, wicked, brutal public relations domination and smearing of reality that I've ever seen. I've never seen anything worse. It's now, it's probably as bad now, but I think most of us can see through it fairly if we want to. Back then, you couldn't. The patriotic American was the rule. We didn't question the government at all. Now there are a lot of people questioning things, and my God, they should. It's bad out there. Witness to History by Mike Walsh. Please consider getting that book. It is stunning to read. You'll see.
Yeah, it's very easy for Americans because, of course, it's published in America. So the Last Testament of Adolf Hitler is a fantastic book. But if I can just plug here for a moment, I had fantastic news last night, and that is the book, The Art of Adolf Hitler, the ultimate album of the Führer's artworks, is to be published and it will be available for sale in 1 month, by mid-May at the outside.
This is your book. I didn't know you were doing a book. I didn't know you were doing a book on the art. That's fabulous.
Yeah, I got a lot of books on the art of Adolf Hitler. Fantastic pictures in it. You wouldn't believe it. I think it's 124 pages or something like that. It's a big book. So
how big is it? A coffee table type book, Mike? A big book?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for this one. He was a superb
artist. The only
artist.
One in the world.
It's true.
The only one
true.
In the world. You know, it's got to be the Mike Walsh edition.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
You know, he was a fantastic artist. You know, I do remember an art specialist who said that if you removed his name from the bottom of the pictures, it's not his name that is selling the pictures. The originals that still exist that weren't destroyed by the Allies in the book-burning fest. If you remove Adolf Hitler's name and put somebody else's name on it, he said they would still be outselling Picasso because of the quality of the artwork by Adolf Hitler. So people don't know this at all.
No, no.
And this is why you and me and people like us are so important to the future of the world. What we are doing, Jeff, is we are farmers. We are sowing seeds for the future generations. And in 200 years, 300 years, the people will be educated because of what we are doing now. And every man, every woman must be a farmer sowing the seeds. And when you buy books, don't just buy them for yourself. Buy them for other people. I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not, you know, looking at the dollars or anything of that nature. These are seeds for the future. Much of virtually everything that is in the Witness to History was documents that I got after World War II, when they were still available. They've all been bought and burned since. So before this happened, you can't get copies of what I drew my research from. You can't get it now. It's been bought and burned by the Jews and the Allies. But it was all in there, so it's too late. If the truth is already out there, and I get some fantastic tributes for that book and the others.
Nice.
So we've
really
got to get them. We've got to get them out there.
All right. Well, we want to do a special program on the art book for sure. I have the Billy Price book. I think that's the other one, the big one, the coffee table book. Is it Billy Price? Am I remembering right? The art book. Anyway, there's another one, but there were some frauds in there. There were people actually painting paintings and forging Hitler's name on them. There were some, and people get caught. It's just a fact. But now the originals... And I mentioned this. I've never told you this. I had become friends with a doctor who worked in a VA hospital. And he was working with a lot of World War II veterans who were dying. Many of them had no family. And they were leaving him their looted paraphernalia from Germany. And he ended up with a number of small Hitler artworks, the likes of which he would do in the cafe, the street-side cafe in Vienna, painting for money so he could eat. And I ended up with six of them. They were stolen from me by an alleged art expert. But anyway, I had six. And they were four were pencil drawings. They were extraordinary. Two of them were little watercolors, and they were really fun. I'd someday like to own another one. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but they're very good. And I don't mean necessarily because of who painted them. What is the St. Charles Church, the winter scene of the snow on the domed church?
That's fantastic, isn't it? In Vienna.
I looked at that and I was stunned. That's just one of many. Anyhow, please continue. And that's really something to look forward to, your new book. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And an interesting aside, you know, being born in 1942... When I was a merchant mariner as a teenager and as a young seaman, I used to go to New York, those heady times. Many of my shipmates, I won't call them colleagues, I call them shipmates, were old enough to have fought in World War II. And in the 1960s, I was constantly meeting people who had fought in the British Army and had been captured by the Germans. And I've got my hand on my heart as I say this now. I have never, ever met anyone who was captured by the Germans who had a bad word for them. And I remember I was on a bus once in near Liverpool at the Beatles period, and I wasn't whistling a Beatles song. I was whistling the Horse Vessel song. Dee, 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 dee. I was sling this. And a guy pulled me by the sleeve, and he said, you know, son, he said, if you'd have been whistling that a few years ago, you'd have been arrested on the spot. And I said, well, I'm going to continue to whistle it, sir. And you know what he said? He said, I haven't heard anything so wonderful for 10 years. This is a bliss. I met, and I had George Marshall. He was captured by the German army, and he was working down in the salt mines in Silesia. And he said they were so close to Adolf Hitler when he came down to check the workings of the salt mines. He said, I could have reached out and touched him. He said, but we just sat there in praise of him. But the first time that I woke up, I was on the Britannic. I was a deck boy on the White Star Line, same line as the Titanic. And I got talking to a quartermaster, and he told me, he said, he was captured in the war. But you can imagine me, Jeff. I'm a 16-year-old. And my eyes just lit up, and my jaw dropped. I said, what? You were captured, your ship was sunk, and you were captured by the Germans? And I said, how come you were captured? Because all propaganda I had heard, Jeff, was that the survivors were machine gunned in the water. I couldn't understand what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. He was defying history. Perhaps he was my first revisionist. And he said, well, what was the problem? He said, they got us off the ship, and then they sank the ship, and then they took us off, and they put us on the submarine. I said, well, what the hell was it like in there? He said, cramped. he said, but they took us back to Germany, and he wouldn't say a bad word about the Germans. And I met many, including the aforesaid Jeff Martin, George Marshall. And I even knew another guy from Scotland, Willie Dick, that was his name. He was sunk three times during the Murmansk convoys, which America and Britain was supplying the goods to the Bolsheviks. And he was sunk three times. Now, when you fall into the Atlantic, Jeff, in the North Atlantic, your life expectancy is 1 minute. It is no use swimming.
30 seconds.
It's the cold.
It's crazy.
It's the cold. The cold that kills you. You're dead within a minute. He survived three of them, and even he never said a bad word about the Germans. Mm-hmm. So that was the life that I am privileged to have lived in the past, and it still lives in my heart and my soul today. And that's a result of the books that are going out there.
You know, speaking of books, there's one other thing to mention. And what is the second most popular book in terms of worldwide sales in the world next to the Holy Bible? Mein Kampf.
You bet. And it will continue to be the Bible because, you know, I remember Auden, forget his first name, is a very famous English writer, W.H. Auden, and he said, have you read Mein Kampf? It was the only honest book written by a politician. He said, so it's worth reading.
Funny. Well,
it turned my head. I think the first book that ever I was first into the British movement in 1968, and I remember a taxi driver friend who said to me, grab a copy of The Learned Elders of Zion, he said, and you will see the future. I got a copy. You could get them quite easy then. They're difficult to get now, but I got a copy. And it opened my eyes, and there's something, if you want a prophecy that beats that of George Orwell, pick up a copy of the Learned Elders of Zion, because it is a map. And as Henry Ford said, they say it's a forgery. He said, if it is, he said, it's the best forgery I ever read. And that was Henry Ford,
a fellow Irish-American. Perfect game plan about what's been done, what's going on now. And it's no fraud. It's what happened. It's what's going on. So anyway, Yes.
They're very worried about the revisionism because I see on the headlines today is all German children who are going through the school will have to go, will be taken on tours of the concentration camps, Auschwitz, Sobibor, and Belsen, and all the rest of it. They are drumming it into their heads. The Russians are doing the same because they don't want the truth out. Because I really regret not keeping the quotes. I can't keep them all. But it was a quote by Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, and a similar quote by Vladimir Putin that said, "We accept the arguments of the historical revisionists, but what we cannot accept is the change in the world system that releasing all of this truth out would cause." So this is what they fear. You know, it would not only crumble, but if people were aware of national socialism, then the capitalist system would collapse, and probably so would Russian, all of the established systems collapse, which I think is a little bit remarkable, because I have listed this on several occasions. I did a story on it. Is Putin, you were talking about Kennedy before, and you quite rightly said that he was influenced by what had happened to Germany. He was a futurist. Putin, who was a KGB officer in Berlin at the close of the war, after the war, he knew exactly. Well, I did a list of about 20 main issues that Putin has adopted from the National Socialist period, and he's put into Russia. And we know how the Russian economy is doing now.
I'll never forget.
He's promoting everything that Hitler was promoting. He's stolen it. It's not Putin's idea.
No, you make a very important point.
He's hijacked it from Mein Kampf and the Third Reich. And the world is moving that way, but they don't call it by that. Now, a rose by any other name is a rose, and I recognize National Socialism. However it appears, the promotion of Christianity, the promotion of being independent and economically, and being military prepared for anything that may come, I recognize all of these, although I do think that, you know, I'm not an apologist for Adolf Hitler. I do think that he trusted the West far too much, and I think he should have done what Putin has done and make sure that the nation had the ability to defend itself before he started putting money into people's pockets. But that's my own view.
I just wish more people had more data and facts to consider before making their final decision. And you should always keep the door open to modify even your final decision as more information comes to light. But the great crushing of Germany didn't stop in 1945, as you know. It continued on into the early 1950s. Millions of Germans were murdered, killed.
14 million, Jeff. 14 million.
Is it 14? See, and those
14
were
million
so-called
just disappeared.
Nationalist Germans who remembered the promise of National Socialism, of what Adolf Hitler wanted for Germany and its people. And if you look at any newsreels of the German people from, let's say, 1933-34 onward, you will see the happiest people you've ever seen in mass. Seriously, they are elate. They have been taken care of and honored by their government. I only wish this government would take care of the American people. 1/100th of what the German government did for the German people during the 1930s and 40s. It just is no comparison.
It removed usury, Jeff. You know, today, 40% of what the Americans pay for anything. Now, we're not talking about directly. We're not talking about an American going into a shoe shop and buying a pair of shoes. They're included as well. But when your local authorities buy a fire appliance, when an education authority buys a school, 40% of everything they spend is borrowed from the banks, and that is paid in interest. So the school that you pay $5 million for, it could be bought for $3 million if it wasn't for the banker's interest. And that's what Hitler removed, all of that. So if you pay $3 million for a school, You didn't pay any interest on it. You got your $3 million schooled. You got value for money. When the lady went in and bought a pair of shoes for $20, she got a pair of shoes she paid, my mathematics are going, €12 for the shoes. So everything that the farmer grows, when the farmer is growing stuff, he's borrowing the money from the banks, buying the seeds and all the rest of it. He's got to buy his tractors, everything, the places where he keeps it. He's got to borrow from the banks, and that all filters down and through to your purses and pockets and wallets. And you are paying 40% more than you need to. That is why Germany, within 36 months, had full employment and was the richest country in the world. He removed the bankers' usury. That's what they. That's why they started the war. And they were a trade competitor because, of course, that gave them a trading advantage. And they were taking trade away from the British Empire, as it was at the time. They were taking American trade. And the Americans were buying up all of the stuff from the Latin American countries that the Germans were buying at a special rate. And they were actually burning it so that the Germans couldn't have it. Unbelievable when people know the true history. And I think that people need to start reading more. Napoleon said, if you want to find somebody who can move the world, find a person who reads books. And he was absolutely right. That's where my education came from. It didn't come from school. My teachers were as useless as a one-armed wheelbarrow.
True.
You know, I came from learning, from reading books. I came from listening to servicemen who had fought in World War II. And I'm self-educated in that way. And what did we get? I don't think I've got a contemporary of the 1950s and the 1960s who can achieve what I've achieved, nearly 80 books with my name on the front. I've very, very successful businesses, you know, including selling property in Spain. I've been very, very successful, so I feel very privileged. The only thing, I think the Lord said to me, Michael, we're going to give you a life on earth, but we're going to give you everything that a man could be proud of, except one thing. He said, I'm not going to give you any money. And I'm still as broke as I was when I was a 16-year-old deck boy seaman in Manhattan. But I'm not worried. I pay the rent. I get by.
Well,
you know, I think somebody said, you know, when you leave this world, leave it with the mark, not with a stain. And so in that respect, I'm far more rich than Donald Trump.
You recommend this as a life course for people. That you're pretty well sounding the same parameters and paradigm that I live within. I don't have a lot of money. I didn't sell out. If I had sold out 25, 30 years ago or more, I would be a very rich man now. But I refused. It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. People should not ever be measured by wealth. This is the worst yardstick to measure somebody by. Anyhow, let's move on.
Jeff, I've got several millionaire friends, and two of them in private conversations have said, Mike, I envy your comparatively simple life. I envy that was one guy, Andrew Bynes. And he was, of my estimate, I reckon he was worth about £25 million, which is about $30 million. Mm-hmm. And he said, I do envy you your simple life. And I do. I go to a marina restaurant where I can buy a meal for a few euros, have glasses of Spanish wine, and I live as good. I live, you know, probably on the next table, there's millionaires. Who cares? Got the same menu. I can afford it. So where's the problem?
I hear you.
As long as it stays that way, Jeff, because what we're going back to the beginning now is we are in Europe and the United Kingdom are being hit hard by the scarcity of fuel. 20% of the fuel stations in France are out of fuel, and we are facing an economic calamity because of Donald Trump and Netanyahu.
Yeah.
They have devastated the world economy, and we are looking to a bleaker future. And maybe this is another advantage of being my age, as I won't be here to endure for very much longer. But, yeah, that's another story.
And it is indeed. And as things continue to react to the horrible choices and directives made by and issued by the State of Israel to Trump, who is only too happy to follow. As we watch that and watch Europe, just wait until these millions and millions, I don't know how many invaders are in Europe now, these third world people with 60 and 70 IQs are going to rise up, and they will not be reasoned with. There's going to be mass war in Europe in all likelihood. I don't see how it can be avoided. I hope I'm wrong. But these people hate whites. They hate European whites. They hate civilization. They are not going to assimilate ever. So what is the outcome here? It's going to have to be a very tragic one for a lot of people, I'm afraid. I don't know how else to see it.
They've been indoctrinated that the white people of Europe are responsible for all of their woes.
Yeah.
And
in a
respect, they perhaps have a point, because we've raped, pillaged, and colonized their countries. They're all slaves under the bankers rather than the colonialists. And they just ran for Europe. And they see us as their enemy, not as their friends. And they said, well, we wouldn't have been here in the first place if we hadn't raped and pillaged our countries, you know, with colonialism. And to that point, I can say it, you know, you've got to look at the people who make the refugees.
Understood.
And that's NATO.
No, it's true. NATO needs to go. The United Nations needs to go, but it won't. These are mechanisms of globalist domination and control.
Nobody's been more successful than NATO. Nobody's been more successful than NATO in creating refugee crises. Every one of them can be taken right back to NATO. All the wars, Algeria, Libya, the Middle East, all of them. You know, somebody's saying, you know, if he nukes Tehran, you know, the survivors will all be heading for Europe. You know, so we're taking it, and you are absolutely right. These people are not going to, you know, they've got a chip on their shoulder, and they're going to be looking for any white person. They won't act, they won't go for the bankers or the elite. They will go for the mom. Well, they're already doing it, you know, the rape figures and the robbery figures.
It's terrible. Terrible what I read here. And I know I'm reading, but just a smidgen, a tiny fragment of what's really happening there. It's horrific. And I keep reading stories about communists in government, and look at Germany. They're trying to force AfD out of existence, and this is would be the biggest political party in Germany of all. This would be German nationalism. The German National Party is what it should be called, but it's called AfD. And the communists are in positions of power, and they are frightened of the AfD. Let's just look in France, the same sort of situation. Anyhow, it's sad, all of it. I don't know what's the future going to be like for Great Britain, but it's already essentially a corpse, a cadaver of what was once a viable civilization and culture. It's just gone. I don't know how you bring that back. It's hard to imagine.
Well, not without blood and sweat and tears, but we've all been through that period before in different periods of history. The white race have always survived it, but it's always a pity that they leave things to go so far. As George Orwell said, the English don't see the writing on the wall until their backs are up against it. And I think that applies to the entire Western Alliance, the peoples of the Western Alliance. There's only 9% of us. When I was born, I think the white race represented about 25% of the world's population. Now it's 9%, and it's shrinking. And
is it 9?
We are at the Battle of Thermopylae. And if we don't do something soon, then you can kiss the white race goodbye. And the world will never be the same again. It will be just as Goebbels predicted. It will fall into a vacuum for the rest of humanity.
He's right. 9%. The war against whites is well launched here now. Not as popular as they'd like it to be, but it's moving in that direction. European Americans are the number one target over here now. They're constantly being singled out by the communist press, communist courts, communist politicians. as being the enemy. It's sad to see, but you're right. I didn't know it had fallen to just 9%. All right, let me remind everyone, Witness to History by Michael Walsh. Please get a copy of it and read it. If you want the truth about how the world got to where it is now, there it is for you. Thank you for getting up early, Mike. We'll talk. Keep the material coming. It's always a pleasure, and I'm honored to be able to post it. Thank you.
I'm smiling here, Jeff. Thank you for the opportunity, and greetings to all of our American friends. A wonderful country, a wonderful people.
Yes,
you've
sir.
Got an awful government, so we, the people, are fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Take care. All right. Mike Walsh. One of a kind, a man who has seen history, lived it, lived through it, and is not tricked or deceived or duped. He saw it. He knows. And many of you are beginning to see it more clearly all the time. Okay, that's it for this week. Wow. Weekend coming up. Boy, they go fast, too. So we'll be right back with you Monday. You know where we'll be on the Internet. The website will be constantly trying to stay on top of, I'll be staying on top of things, so we'll post it for you there. The network will broadcast right through the weekend, as it always does, and we are very proud of all of you for caring. Thank you. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk soon.